live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Turks, Jake Huger, Wozni Labre's here. The Woz. Okay. This is going to be an excellent show. It is going to be a fun and educational show, the kind of show that we specialize in at TYT. But Woz, of course, you know, is the writer for The Athletic, and he also does a podcast with Nando Avila. You guys know him. It's called The Woke Bros, because they're awake the entire podcast. Never once do they fall asleep. Okay, so Woz, quick question before we get started with serious stuff. You and I have never done the show together before. That's ridiculous, unbelievable. We're addressing it at this point. So the Wizard of Woz, A, do you get it all the time? B, do you hate it? C, do you love it?
Wizard of Woz, I don't get all the time. It's actually fine. I'm not opposed to it, to be called the Wizard. What I do get all the time is the old Budweiser ad. You mean like, what's up? So that's one that I usually get. I've gotten that a lot more often than Wizard of Woz.
Yeah. So the only reason why I would hesitate, because I'm ready to give you that nickname instantly. But you know, the Washington Wizards and like people, you know, that's the Wizards, like kind of a mixed bag, right? If it wasn't a mixed bag, I'd be going Wizard of Woz 100 miles an hour right now.
Sure, but why you should go for it is because it's ethnically problematic, since I'm Haitian and we get stereotyped into being voodoo priestess and all of that type of stuff. So go with Wizard of Woz, because I probably might be a wizard as the child of two Haitian immigrants. Put a hex on you people out there if you mess around with me.
Yeah, hexes. They're not for Wanda Maximoff alone anymore. Oh yeah, I watch. Okay, all right. So, all right. You know what? You empowered Wizard through the way that you rolled that over into a positive. We're going with Wizard of Woz. All right. But the problem is then it's going to be Woz or Wiz. Anyways, all right. I told you it's a wild show. I told you we're off to a crazy start. All right, look, one of the things we're going to tell you in this hour is the future. Okay, we've got the Wizard here, and we also have the Swami. So we got the future all locked up. Okay, so let's do this. So you all know that we can't pass a lot of bills in the Senate or overall because of the filibuster. Now, the problem for the Democrats is that they've really, really got to pass H.R. 1. What's H.R. 1? That is the pro-voting rights, anti-corruption bill that the House passed last time around and again this time around. So that was their top priority. That is why it's called H.R. 1. Very clever. You get it. So now, there are parts of the bill, I told you earlier, that they'll never pass because they are anti-corruption measures. I'm going to prove that to you in a second. And I said they would strip those out and then they would try to pass the rest of it. And in order to pass the rest of it, they'd have to get rid of the filibuster somehow. Well, that's where things get interesting, okay? Because as it turns out, they're now thinking of making an exception to the filibuster. A, Drums. B, let's find out if that's a good thing or a bad thing, okay? So number one, we're gonna go to Jennifer Rubin. Is she a Democrat? No. Is she a progressive? Hell no. But she's one of those never Trumpers that has settled into the Democratic Party and is in the middle of trying to hijack it. So of course, she hates the anti-corruption measures. But the reason I quote her, other than the fact that it's in the Washington Post and she's one of the leading indicators, is because the Democratic establishment is almost indistinguishable from the never Trumpers. They're all corporate Republicans and Democrats, and it's really near impossible to tell the difference if you're being an actual journalist, okay? So let's go to some of her quotes here to give you a sense of what they're gonna do in this measure. And by the way, before I go to that, I should explain, both parts of the bill are great. And the voting rights part is super important, and I really, really want it to pass, not just because it helps Democrats, but because it's actually really good policy. We want as many people to vote as possible. So I'm not against that part, but I'm also massively in favor of the anti-corruption parts, which Washington despises. Okay, so here's Rubin in the Washington Post. She writes, the sprawling HR1, however, addresses issues well beyond voting access, encompassing everything from campaign finance reform to Supreme Court ethics. However meritorious all these provisions may be, the legislation's only hope, and it's a slim one, rests with the Democrats' willingness to pare down the measure to match the nature of the current assault on voting rights. It makes it sound like she's so worried about the assault on voting rights, that's why we have to kill the anti-corruption measures. No, those things are not logically connected. We'll come back to that in a second. Now, let me give you one more along these lines. She says, a short, easily understood list of items, such as that will be critical to driving popular support. It's easy to think up of reasons to oppose campaign finance reform. Really, is it? The whole country is in favor, but she says it's easy to oppose campaign finance reform. It's hard to deny the Justice Department's ability to anticipate and ward off anti-voting measures by states we now see are dedicated to reducing minority voting. In short, if Democrats remove issues that will be used as a pretext for opposition, they can make this a clear up or down issue on voter suppression. In other words, that's the Washington establishment saying, oh, hell no, we're not gonna do the anti-corruption measures. Who the hell do you think we are? We are the corruption. So now what's Biden gonna do? Well, he has promised to, quote, refine and advance for the People Act. That's the other word for the official title of HR1. In other words, refine means I ain't gonna do the anti-corruption part. Don't be crazy. Now, we're gonna talk about the filibuster portion of this in a second, but first I wanna bring Waz in. So Waz, am I over analyzing her comments and Biden's comments, or do you think that I might be onto something?
You're absolutely onto something. You know, the voting, first of all, we know they don't wanna get rid of the filibuster. If they did, they wouldn't be doing all this hemming and hawing, and we wouldn't have the conservative Dems coming out already before it's even proposed. Like, whoa, you know, we gotta preserve the Senate norms because it's so pure. Our nation rests on the sanctity of these ridiculous, arcane Senate rules. So we know they don't actually wanna do that. And anti-corruption, I love that Jennifer Rubin is talking about it, because the people who tend to benefit the most from not having these anti-corruption measures are exactly who you said, the corporatist Dems and the establishment GOP, who for the most part have the least, you know, sort of differences that you can see within the party, right? Like, obviously, there's a difference between, say, Bernie and Ted Cruz, if you will, in the Senate. But there's no meaningful difference between McConnell and Schumer, not that I could see anyway. So yeah, I think you nailed it on the head. Jennifer Rubin is completely aligned with the McConnell and Schumer types, because those are the most powerful people in the party. Those are the most conservative people in the Democratic Party specifically, who she now, you know, fakes to be making community with. So yeah, I wish I had something to add, but I don't. You're right.
Look, I'll take your right all day long. nice to meet you. All right, let's go to the second part of it, because what you're referring to is a filibuster. And guys, you all know that if the Democrats wanted to pass their entire alleged agenda, which has plenty of progressive stuffs in it, so like the $15 minimum wage and you know, an infrastructure bill that is pretty close to the Green New Deal, etc., they would end the filibuster right now, right now. Instead, they'll likely wait till they can't get anything else passed and then end the filibuster and then hand it over to the Republicans when the Republicans become the majority, right? That's the most likely outcome. But now there's a new idea, which is, well, maybe we could cheat. Maybe we could just carve out something for HR, half of HR 1. And in case if you're wondering why did the Democrats care so much? The more people vote, the more likely it is for Democrats to win. The people who say that are Republicans. They say it over and over again. Trump accidentally said it. Paul Weyrich, who started the Heritage Foundation and so many other conservative groups, said it back in 1980 or 81. And we've shown you that clip 100 times. And Republican politicians all over the country are like, no voting. We just did a story on it last week. Please, no. We got to limit voting. There's 250 anti-voting legislations that are being proposed all across the country by Republican legislators right now. So the Democrats have self-interest in making sure the voting rights part of HR 1 passes. But since they are deeply corrupt, they will pretend to do anti-corruption and go, oh, there was nothing we could do. Oh, golly, you twist my arm. Now, the only problem is since voting rights are not at all a budgetary issue, they cannot use reconciliation. I don't even think they could use reconciliation. And I want to use reconciliation for everything, okay? So now, given that, well, the filibusters, their number one problem. And now the part where they cheat. But in a positive way, we're going to ask you about it in a poll because this one's really tricky, okay? But first, let me explain what it is. So let's go to Jennifer Rubin again. She concludes at the end, everything should be done to find a bipartisan filibuster proof majority to champion such a bill. She knows that's not possible. Or if that fails, to make crystal clear to all Democrats that a democracy exception to the filibuster rule is essential. Now, that's Jennifer Rubin. You see democracy exception. The reason I'm doing this story is I've already heard it from folks inside Washington. Here comes the democracy exception. Then I look, then I see, oh yeah, here comes Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post talking about democracy exception. And then as we're about to do the story, boom, Stacey Abrams lands. And she says, quote, protection of democracy is so fundamental that it should be exempt from the filibuster rules. There we go. We got agreement. Mainstream Republicans, mainstream Democrats that are now nominally in the Democratic Party, the mainstream Republicans that have left and joined the Democratic Party, they're like, yeah, we want to win. But to be fair to Stacey Abrams, her whole life is around voting rights, and she's right, and those provisions are excellent, right? But this is a giant but. If they do an exception to the filibuster for this piece of legislation, that is great, but frankly, helps Democrats in their elections. The reason to do the exception is so that you don't actually have to do anything progressive economically, and you can still get those donors as sweet, sweet cash from the Chamber of Commerce. Was thoughts?
It's so Democrat as to be kind of laughable. This idea that we would just do a half measure and we would make this one time exception because voting is so critical. Democracy, it's so critical. But things like infrastructure spending, a minimum wage, you know, things that materially affect people's lives aren't as critical, right? All you gotta do is go out and vote. Cause we know voting solves everything for people. That's what does everything for people, which we know is just not true, right? The bottom line is, it's hard to believe that Democrats want to actually pass things that'll make people's lives better when they stump for stuff like this, right? Like when they frame it, like, cause there's nobody who's saying that, you know, the right to vote in this country isn't actually absolutely essential. Like they're creating a sort of straw man argument that this is the most essential. We all agree with that, right? Like, and you just said it, even Republicans know what it means for people to go out and vote. There's no doubt about that. To me, that's all the more reason to attach it to anti-corruption. That's what the Republicans would do. They would be like, this is this essential thing. Let's tie this other thing that we really also like to it too. That's politics, right? Like that's how that should work. Instead, they're handicapping and hamstringing themselves like before they even get to the fight. It's like, no, let's take out the anti-corruption stuff. And again, the only reason to do that is because they don't really believe in it. Like there's no other way to frame that. And you know, we'll get into some of the, you know, the little threats that are being lobbied about getting rid of the filibuster on the other side right now. But I think this filibuster fight kind of tells you everything you need to know about what's happening right now politically in Washington.
Yeah. So look, the funny thing is I'm a little bit more generous than you are, right? But you actually triggered a thought there, Waz, that it's a really good point. Look, we think voting is essential just for the reasons of democracy. So we like those portions of HR 1, right? But the Democrats will also say, hey, it also helps Democrats win because the more people vote, the more likely Democrats are to win. And then if we win, that way you'll get what you want.
Lies.
But wait a minute. You're telling us that by not getting rid of the rest of the filibuster, we're not going to get what we want. Like the point of putting you in office isn't to put you in office. The point of putting you in office is so you pass the bills that help our lives. Basically, the Democrats through this trick are saying, we want you to help our lives and protect democracy, to be fair, right? But not help your lives. Because if we wanted to help your lives, we just end the filibuster, we could do it tomorrow. And we're choosing not to because we don't really want to pass those bills. It's super obvious we don't want to pass bills like $15 minimum wage, a Green New Deal, Medicare for all, they despise, of course. They would never want to protect your health. I mean, what are we, in the middle of a pandemic or something? They're corporate Democrats. So those are facts. Now, the anti-corruption part is even more inexcusable. And it, by the way, it hasn't happened yet. So I'm reading the tea leaves for you guys. And I see Joe Biden, forget Rubin, when I see President Biden say that he's going to refine the bill, my job is to translate that for you. And you get to see with your own eyes, are we right or are we wrong? I'm telling you now, well ahead of time, they're going to take out the anti-corruption parts. Now, Rubin says, oh, well, that's because it's going to run into a lot of trouble. Why?
With who?
It's actually the single most popular part of the bill. I mean, anti-corruption, you get like 96% approval in the country. All Republican voters will join us. All independent voters will join us. That what she means is it's not popular in Washington. Of course it's not popular in Washington. But so this is the insane stand they have. So, but in that one, they don't even have an excuse. They could do the anti-corruption stuff with the democracy exception. But they're not going to. They're not going to because they are corrupt. I'm telling you ahead of time, and you will see that movie play out exactly as I told you. And then you'll know what this game is all about. Okay. But meanwhile, I want to do one last thing here. I want to introduce this poll because this is a hard poll. So, and for all of our polls, you go to tyt.com/polls and you'll see all of them, including this one, obviously. So we're asking you, do you want them to create a democracy exception for the filibuster or restore the talking filibuster? That's a Manchin idea. And these are things that I've championed in the past too, like a decade ago. I was like, why are you just letting them do the filibuster without at least doing a filibuster, right? And talking it through. The third one is neither, try to end the filibuster entirely. Now that's the easy answer, but guys, like understand that in Washington, if they go for that, if they go for the whole enchilada, they might not get it. Because some of the corporate Democrats are so thoroughly controlled by the Chamber of Commerce, they would not increase your wages on a boat. They would not increase them with a goat. They would not do it under penalty of law. There's no way they're going to get you healthcare and higher wages. They're owned, totally owned. So we might not get it if you go in that direction. But on the other hand, that's, you know, then we would get, they would have no excuses left but to actually do the agenda that they promised. So I'm curious what you guys are going to vote on that. Do you just take the democracy exception, make sure you get HR 1 in? Do you go for a talking filibuster, which doesn't even guarantee HR 1, but makes the $15 minimum wage and others a little bit more likely? Or do you gamble and try to end a whole filibuster? Waz, how are you going to vote?
I mean, they got to go for the gusto. The filibuster, and you know, a lot of people don't realize this as it exists right now. It was basically invented in this form by the Dixiecrats after Reconstruction during Jim Crow, essentially as a way to protect themselves from any piece of legislation that might help black people at all. That's it. That's the legacy of this maneuver in the Senate, right? Like this idea that is this sacred, you know, this sacred thing that the Senate's been doing forever and the forefathers and back when George Washington had the wooden teeth, we just always filibustered stuff. It's not true. And, you know, more importantly, this idea that everybody's going to put forth about the Republicans and the Dems, they should have to come together and to the table to pass stuff bipartisanly. Show me the proof that that's been happening with the filibuster. Where's the proof of this? And I'll show you the proof that it's not. Last week, President Joe Biden and the Democratic Congress passed a $2 trillion stimulus package that no Republicans voted for, that 70% of the country is in favor of. And then after it passes, a bunch of Republicans started taking credit for it. They didn't vote for it, but still wanted to take credit for it. It's not working the way they're claiming that it does with the filibuster. So it's all a farce. It's a joke.
100% right. Look, the people in Washington will look at us and go, well, look, Waz has got a baseball cap on and, you know, he hasn't been working a local news covering fires and car crashes for the last 20 years. Why should I trust him? You know, the guys on TV have such nice suits and they say the filibuster is part of Senate tradition forever and it's really important and brings together bipartisanship. No. They are absolutely positively wrong. Waz is right about the facts. The founding fathers actually hated the idea of a filibuster. They argue against it in Federalist 22. And they say that it was like literally why they did the Constitution and got rid of the Articles of Confederation, because they did not want a supermajority blocking everything. And the filibuster was largely used until Barack Obama's time. Well, then kind of also in that time too, but was to prevent civil rights. It was mainly used almost exclusively to fight against civil rights, including anti-lynching laws. So senators said, no, we demand the right to lynch black people in the South.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
We're going to use the filibuster to do that. So that's what the filibuster is. So we're going to break it down later in the show more. But in this case, we have got to call, the most important thing, guys, is we've got to be honest and real. So whether they're going to, the Democrats are going to do what they're going to do, but we're not going to let them get away with their lies. The mainstream media will be, oh yeah, filibuster is so important. So was the democracy exception. It's always been around. No, you just invented it yesterday. Okay. Oh yeah. Well, of course you got to do a democracy, but that's the progressive legislation. Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Economically, they don't want anything passed. They say they want things passed. They block their own legislation, but they say they want it passed. So I'm going to give them credit for wanting it. No, you guys are all wrong. You do not judge them by their words, they're politicians. You judge them by their actions. If they actually wanted their agenda passed, they would end the filibuster tomorrow. They have every ability to do that, but they don't want the economic part of their agenda passed because it's progressive. And that's why they play these games. All right, if you signed up for an hour-long filibuster talk, you came to the right place because we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to outline that history for you guys because it's in the news so much. And Democrats, at least progressives, start to attack their own. Ooh, okay, good, good, because they're not their own, because they're actually trying to help the bad guys. So that is a super interesting fight. What you do now is you take a second and a half to like and share this stream, and then we come right back.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
During the break, Covfefe 19 writes in, they want to make it easier for people to vote, yet they don't want to give people a reason to vote. Bingo, 100% right. Okay, you took the words right out of Waz's mouth. Okay, so Politic Tick Tick Ticks writes in, much as I hate half measures, I think right now we're in a crisis. We have to counteract the GOP push against voting rights. Centrist Dems aren't going to give us anything, but if more people can vote more easily, then we can sell progressive policy and candidates to these people. So look, these are fair points. They really are. That's why I think the poll question is not a no-brainer. So they conclude by saying, taking the voting rights and then use it to amass more power for people who will vote for the right things. So remember, when more people get to vote, it's not just Democrats that have an advantage. Progressives have a bigger advantage too, because usually newer voters, younger voters, and more likely to be progressive voters. So these are all in our member section, tyt.com/join to become a member, be part of the show. And now I'm going to Colorado Blue Blazer Regular, and he writes in, I honestly believe the Democratic leadership does not want to win elections. They want to win their elections, but they want to be in the minority. They want every economic and political agenda that Republicans want. war, lowest possible taxes for themselves and the ultra wealthy, but don't want the pressure to do anything constructive. I got to be honest with you. I think that summarizes the last 40 years of American politics, and infinitely better than any mainstream media reporter. Smartest audience in the world, absolutely. I mean, does Nancy Pelosi want to be Speaker of the House? Sure. Does Schumer want to be Majority Leader? Sure. But they don't actually want to pass anything. That's why it's easier to be in the minority. Back on Young Turks, Cenk and Waz with you guys. So I try to read the member comments to the YouTube and Twitch audience during the breaks. By the way, you can become a member on YouTube by hitting that join button below. It is so attractive. You're gonna wanna go ahead and hit that, okay? And it's just $1.99 per month, just to show support, get the emotes, etc. $4.99 gets you the post game that me, Waz, and Francesca are gonna do tonight. You guys are gonna love it. $9.99 gets you all of it. All right, but I wanna read one quick thing from Twitch. Sir Wyatt Hill, who's been with us for 3 months, subscribe through Amazon Prime, so it's free if you do that for you guys, but we get the revenue. It's called hashtag Bezos Bucks. Who came up with that? You guys did. Our audience did. So roll with it. But Sir Wyatt Hill made a great point. Did Trump ever use a democracy exception? I don't remember. Yeah, in other words, of course the Republicans didn't go, oh, exception this, exception that. Whatever they wanted to pass, $2 trillion tax cut, boom, they passed it instantly. Oh, reconciliation, whatever, who cares? Give me the goddamn money, is what McConnell and Trump said. All right, so now speaking of McConnell, let's go to the next story. So Mitch McConnell is threatening the Democrats. If you guys take away the filibuster, my God, we will then do our agenda. Okay, I think that's how democracy works, but let's break it down. First of all, let's get McConnell warmed up with this clip.
Some Democratic senators seem to imagine this would be a tidy trade-off. If they could just break the rules on a razor-thin majority. But Mr. President, anyone who really knows the Senate knows that's not what would happen. So let me say this very clearly for all 99 of my colleagues. Nobody serving in this chamber can even begin to imagine what a completely scorched earth Senate would look like.
So look, I tell the turtle to slow his roll, but it's pretty slow to begin with. This will be scorched earth, I tell you, you'll see what I can do. Look, if I was Schumer, I'd laugh that stuff off. But hey, have at it, Hoss, do your best. And you know what, every time you pop your head out of your shell and tell me, oh, I'm gonna do this legislative maneuver, I'll just kill that legislative maneuver. You know why? Because I'm in the majority and you're not. But Democrats don't roll that way, of course, because they're weak. So, but let's say, here's McConnell doing more threats about how I'm going to tie everything up. Even before we get to the filibuster, he's going to do threats on filibuster and say, I'm going to tie you up on rules and regulations. Ooh, go ahead, Mitch.
Everything that Democrat senators did to Presidents Bush and Trump, everything the Republican Senate did to President Obama, would be child's play compared to the disaster that Democrats would create for their own priorities if they break the Senate. Even the most basic aspects of our colleagues' agenda, the most mundane task of the Biden presidency, would actually be harder, not easier, for Democrats in a post-nuclear Senate.
So in other words, if you get rid of the filibuster, again, I'm gonna tie you down with all these rules and regulations. And you know, what we did to Obama will be nothing compared to this. First of all, let me explain what they did to Obama. For about 50 years, the filibuster was used on average less than once a year. McConnell started using it on average 80 times a year under Obama. Dude, you fired all your missiles. You got nothing left. This is the most obvious bluff in the world. And whatever you have left, we can counter it in the majority. And but so to the rest of us, Waz, this looks like the emptiest threat anybody's ever seen. I guarantee you, like, the Democrats are ordering Depends now. They already bought the stock in it. It is insider trading. Oh my God, what is, you know, what's Mitch gonna do to us with rules and regulations?
You know what's so crazy is I hear that and hear a couple of things. One, if I'm a Republican voter and I had the presidency, I had the Senate, I had the House, and you did none of this stuff, any of it at any point, what does that say about this party? What does that say about this leadership and about what they actually want to do when they get in power? Because I don't understand how just the filibuster is what kept, you know, was say between you and all of these Republican wet dreams that never came through. It's nonsense. And, you know, I love the idea that shoveling money up to the richest Americans all over again isn't just the only thing that they want to do. Like, there's just no proof Mitch McConnell wants to do any of the crap that he just threatened to do. And, you know, lastly, basically all this tells me is that Democrats need to remember Obamacare. Remember, we're going to repeal and replace. Where as soon as we get in there, we're going to kill these guys. We're going to do this. They couldn't strip a single one of the things that everybody loved about Obamacare. And that's why you see this threat. They know once policies that people like get enacted, they can't reverse them. That's why they can't take away Social Security. They can't take away Medicare. They can't take away pre-existing conditions. Hell, even the stimulus spending. They saw all the spending Trump did, the checks that people got, the unemployment benefits, people loved it. They know they can't campaign against this stuff once the genie gets out of the bottle. And that's why Mitch McConnell has to come out with these threats, because he knows he is dead in the water the second that anything meaningful gets passed for the people of this country.
So look, Waz is so on top of it, because I want you to now watch the second half of what McConnell says, and you're gonna see exactly what he's talking about, okay? So let's show you two clips here. Start with the first one here, go ahead.
As soon as Republicans wound up back in the saddle, we wouldn't just erase every liberal change that hurt the country. We'd strengthen America with all kinds of conservative policies with zero input from the other side.
First of all, what input did you ask for when Trump was in charge? Oh, come on. Do people look at this with a straight face? Remember when Trump was like, look, I'm really looking forward to a lot of input from the Democrats. And McConnell was like, oh yeah, keep that input coming in. Okay, zero. But mainly to Waz's point now, watch this last part.
How about this? Nationwide right to work for working Americans. Defunding Planned Parenthood and sanctuary cities. On day one, a whole new era of domestic energy production, sweeping new protections for conscience and the right to life of the unborn, concealed carry reciprocity in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, massive hardening of security on our southern border.
Look, the extreme right wing is nuts on a lot of stuff, but they are right about one core thing, which is the same thing that we believe about our side, which is that establishment Republicans don't mean a word of what they say. Now, the agenda that he just listed is the top agenda of the Republicans. They had everything. Waz nailed it. They had all the branches. They could have passed anything they wanted. They didn't pass any of that stuff. Why? Guys, why? Why don't the establishment Democrats ever pass anything they claim that they want? And the establishment Republicans never pass the things that the right wing wants? Because they're not here to serve you. They're here to serve their corporate donors. So the only thing that ever passes is things that the Chamber of Commerce has accepted. So what, under Trump, what was that? They didn't even bother building a wall. They're like, there's not enough money in that, right? They passed a $2 trillion tax cut for the richest people and mainly for corporations. And then on top of that, what did Trump pass and then Biden pass? COVID relief. Well, that sounds pretty good. That comes to us. We kind of like that, right? Yes, there are parts of it that are great. But the majority of the money went to multinational corporations through the first relief package and through what the Federal Reserve did, up to $4 trillion of money printed and handed off to corporations. And even the money that went to...
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
Us under the new Biden bill, it stimulates the economy and then helps those same businesses. Okay. And that's why they were okay with it. What was the one part that the corporations were not okay with in that bill? Raising your wage.
Yep.
So the $15 minimum wage got stripped out, not because of Democratic or Republican priorities. And remember, 75% of the country, including an overwhelming majority of Republicans, wanted that provision in the bill, okay? But it got stripped out because the only person or the only entity that counts said no, and that was the Chamber of Commerce. So business 100% controls both establishment wings of the Republican and Democratic Party.
Man, it's so crazy because all you have to do is think about these things in the frame of who benefits, right? Like, obviously, we would all benefit from universal healthcare. We would all benefit from not being left to the whims of whatever job we work for, whether or not they felt like giving us healthcare and paying for it. And why do they want to keep that as something they're responsible for? Because it's a bargaining chip. They say, oh, we don't have to increase your wage. We're letting you live on healthcare. Why would we pay you more? Why would they want a minimum a wage hike of $15? Because something like Amazon would look and say, look, if you wanted to go work at McDonald's for $8, you could do that. Or you could come mess with us for $14. If McDonald's was offering $15 an hour, Amazon would have to raise their wages. That's the only people who are against these things, these provisions, are capital. Nobody else. Economists, the people who study this stuff, have all basically come to agreement like there's no reason not to do this. Actually, universal healthcare would bring down the cost of it. A minimum wage hike would not materially cripple the economy. In fact, it would work for everybody, all people involved. The only people against it, like Jenk, like just beautifully just illustrated, is capital, is the business class.
Yeah, and by the way, we do the show with the audience. So YouTube Super Chat, sometimes we read those comments. Subliminal Sapper just wrote in, the right has rhinos and we have dinos, both in their age and the way that they vote. Okay, it's 100% true, smartest audience in the world. Okay, hit the join button below if you wanna join us on YouTube. All right, now look, one last thing about that. Think about what Mitch McConnell is telling you. If the Republicans were to hold the House, the Senate, and the White House again, we would pass our entire agenda. Okay, what would be wrong with that if we live in a democracy? Now, I don't like their agenda, so I'd fight against their agenda. But yeah, that's what's supposed to happen in a democracy. If you win, you do your agenda. Instead, the filibuster and all these rules and regulations in the Senate are used to make sure that they could pretend that they're going to do something for the two sides and never actually do it. That is not how a democracy is supposed to work. It's in a democracy, the side that wins is actually supposed to do their agenda. And so he's now threatening the Democrats, like, if you guys actually stop bluffing and actually do your agenda, then we'll do our agenda. And the chamber will be really, really mad with both of us. Okay, you know what that entire Mitch McConnell speech was? Crying to mommy. Okay, and mommy is the Chamber of Commerce. Mommy, they're gonna do something you don't want. They're gonna force us to do things we don't want, mommy. Boom, go back in the show. All right. All right. Wax on, wax off. All right. Listen, we got to take a break. But when we come back, I'm still not done with the filibuster. I'm going to break that filibuster by the end of the show. Okay, we're going to filibuster. It's not the first time we've done it. No, but seriously, finally, when we come back, the history of the filibuster. This will blow your mind, and this is the video you're going to go share with all your family and friends. We'll be right back. Back during the break, back to our members. Catman Steve says about Mitch McConnell, he was crying for his friend Joe Manchin to save him again, the undemocratic one vote majority, right? Biden at some point's got to decide who's president. Is it Manchin or is it Biden? But the reality is, it's both. Biden's using Manchin as a foil. Like, oh, golly gee, there's nothing I could do. Joe Manchin twisted my arm. Joe, twist again. I don't want to do that stuff. You and I both don't want to do it. Twist it. So that's what's happening. Jespy Anti-Racist writes in, what blows my mind is both Republicans and Democrats fail to realize that they too are but puppets for the rich. Jess, you know, I think there's some chance they do recognize that. I think that what's sadder is the media doesn't recognize it. Like, you, Ted Cruz knows he's taking orders. He knows he's a servant, right? I mean, in a best case scenario, he's the head butler, right? But when the Mercer slammed the door in his face during the Trump convention back in 2016, after they gave him $13 million in the primaries, he then turned around and started phone banking for Trump and doing everything they wanted. You think he doesn't know? He knows he's a little bitch for the rich. That's who he is. And so he's like, yes, sir. What do you need me to do next, sir? He's the most servile piece of crap you've ever seen. It's just the media doesn't know. They're like, oh, Ted Cruz thinks this. He doesn't think anything, you morons. right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Waz with you guys today. I'm not done with the filibuster by damn sight, so let's keep going, okay? So lots of talk about how we need filibuster reform, driven mainly by progressives, but now a lot of Democrats want to pass HR 1 because it makes them more likely to win the next set of elections. So now a lot of the leaders are talking about it, but a couple of their own is preventing them, including Kyrsten Sinema. We're going to get to Sinema in a second because her hypocrisy is awesome, and we're going to break it down for you guys. But first, Dick Durbin, number two in charge of the Democrats in the Senate, actually saying that they might want to get rid of the filibuster. Let's watch.
The filibuster is still making a mockery of American democracy. The filibuster is still being misused by some senators to block legislation urgently needed and supported by a strong majority of the American people. Rather than protecting the finely balanced system our founders created, today's filibuster throws the system out of balance, giving one half of one branch of government what amounts to veto over the rest of government. It promotes gridlock. Not good governance.
Look, that's super obvious, right? But just 4 years ago, 31 Democratic senators were like, we will never get rid of the filibuster. It allows us to hide. Why would we get rid of our blankie? We can hide under the blankie and pretend we're for progressive economic legislation and never actually pass it. So, and Durbin was among those folks. He didn't want to get rid of the filibuster. So now he does because they need that HR 1, a sweet, sweet HR 1 voting rights, which is great, but also helps them win. So that's why he's going in this direction. Now, one of his principal opponents is Kyrsten Sinema, the Republican, the Democratic senator from Arizona. Now, why does Democrat want to block it? She is, along with Joe Manchin, the two most pro-corporate senators in the Democratic Party, and maybe in all of the Senate. So she wants to block every economic piece of legislation that the Democrats have on behalf of her corporate donors. That's who Sinema is. So let me be clear about her quotes. She said, retaining the legislative filibuster is not meant to impede the things that we want to get done. Hilarious. Rather, it's meant to protect what the Senate was designed to be, a place where senators come together, find compromise, and get things done for our country. Okay, let me be super clear. None of that is true. And I'm going to prove it definitively for you guys in a minute. That is not what the filibuster is for. The filibuster was to end civil rights. So I will explain. But first, is she at all open to negotiating on this with fellow Democrats? She's open to negotiating everything with the Republicans. She just said it. I want to compromise with the Republicans. I'm desperate to give Republicans things that they don't deserve because they're in the minority. But I want to give it to them anyway because that's what my donors want. Okay. So how about compromising with Democrats? Is she open to any reform of the filibuster? She says, in January, a spokesperson for Sinema said she was against eliminating the filibuster and, quote, not open to changing her mind on that point. So to Republicans, yes. To Democrats and progressives, hell no. Okay. Now, what's great is Breanna Westbrook, former Justice Democrat candidate, now vice chair of the Democratic Party in Arizona, now has some degree of power. This is why I tell you to run for things, because you can make a difference. And Breanna's awesome. So she's saying, hey, you know what? You said that you wanted fundamental change. We know we can't get fundamental change without getting rid of the filibuster. So let me throw your video right back at you. They're in the same party in the same state. That's why this is courageous, it's bold, and I'm here for it. Let's watch. This is Breanna Westbrook.
Looking at a revival of the progressive movement in Arizona, things are so bad in our state that that actually can sometimes be helpful because it really brings people together to fight in a collective movement for progress.
So that's Breanna Westbrook throwing Sinema's own words right back at her. You said things are so bad that you need this reform. Now you're saying, we don't need any stinking reform. I'd rather just agree with the Republicans. That's just basically a fact. By the way, you don't actually agree with the Republican voters. You agree with the Republican politicians. So now let's go to a Data for Progress poll in Arizona. So do her voters agree with her? And this is not just Democrats, this is all voters in Arizona. Is it more important to you that senators pass major legislation to address the problems we face as a nation, or that they preserve traditional Senate procedures and rules like the filibuster? The majority, 61%, said it is more important to pass major legislation. Around a quarter, 26%, said it was more important to preserve traditional Senate procedures. So Kyrsten Sinema, the politician, is doing this for 26% of her electorate? That makes no sense. What that poll doesn't tell you is 99% of her donors don't want her to end the filibuster, because that's their excuse for not passing higher wages, healthcare for everybody, etc. Okay. By the way, of her own Democratic voters, 76% say it's more important to pass major legislation. So now, let's talk about what the reality is. Look, you hear all the time, oh, filibuster, I mean, it is part of Senate tradition, it's so important, it's been around forever, and they make it sound like it's part of the Constitution. It is not at all part of the Constitution. In fact, the Founding Fathers hated it, as I'm about to prove to you, okay? But first, let me give you even more context. How often was the filibuster used in the past? Almost never. So let me explain. From 1917 to 1970, and this is Ezra Klein from the New York Times, and these are facts. The Senate took 49 votes to break filibusters, 49. Those are cloture votes. That is fewer than one each year. On average, less than one a year between 1917 to 1970. Okay, we're gonna get to what those votes were in a second, okay? But it's barely used. That is this actual Senate tradition for over 50 years, barely used, okay? Now, since 2010, it has taken an average of more than 80 votes each year to end filibusters, more than 80. Gee, what happened in 2010? All right, Obama was president and McConnell wanted to block his entire agenda. So McConnell came in and said, once a year? No, we're gonna do it more than 80 times a year. More than 80 times a year. That's in 2010, that's just 10, 11 years ago. Senate tradition, my ass. Okay, they didn't used to block these bills like this. Okay, it is just not, it's empirically false. By the way, look, I get why Sinema wants to lie. I get why McConnell wants to lie, because they work for corporations. They don't work for you. But media, what are you doing? Good job here by Ezra Klein of the New York Times. Give him credit. Give the New York Times credit. But the rest of the media, why do you keep calling it Senate tradition when it was never tradition? And I remember covering it on the Young Turks as McConnell was doing it. I'm like, why don't they make them do a real filibuster and talk it through? He's doing 80 a year. And everybody else in the media was like, no, Cenk, I don't know what you're talking about. We were born yesterday. Didn't we have 79 or 81? No, we didn't. We didn't. It's just not true. But the media all regurgitate corporate talking points. So wait, hold up now though. What was this about here though? What did the Founding Fathers actually wanted? What was the filibuster? How did it even come about? So he's in a conversation, Ezra Klein was in his new show on New York Times, the podcast. And I'm taking this from the transcript with Adam Gentleson, who is a great guy. He used to work for Harry, don't hold it against him. He's generally a progressive and he wrote a book about this whole phenomenon. And it's called Kill Switch, The Rise of the Modern Senate and the Crippling of American Democracy. And he's an expert on the filibuster, okay? And remember, he worked in the Senate, so he knows all these rules inside and out and the history. He explains, the irony here is that the framers saw this coming. And they identified this misperception about supermajority threshold at the time in 1789. The reason they sought it was that they had just finished having direct firsthand experience with the Articles of Confederation, which did require a supermajority threshold for most major categories of legislation. Do you understand what he's saying there? Filibuster is not in the Constitution because they didn't want it in the Constitution. In fact, they wrote the Constitution because the Articles of Confederation sucked. And the Articles of Confederation had super majorities like the filibuster. So they couldn't pass anything. You remember you read it in civics class? You didn't read about the filibuster part, but you read the parts about how the Articles of Confederation was so bogged down, they couldn't pass any legislation. Guess what? We went back to the Articles of Confederation. We went back to the thing that the Founding Fathers said, that definitely doesn't work. We gotta do just simple majority. Now, get a load of this. If you're still not convinced, here's Alexander Hamilton. Alexander Hamilton in Federalist 22, explaining this very concept. Back then, the concept is supermajorities, just like a filibuster. Here we go. The necessity of unanimity in public bodies or of something approaching towards it, so basically a supermajority requirement, has been founded upon a supposition that it would contribute to security. But its real operation is to embarrass the administration, to destroy the energy of the government, and to substitute the pleasure, caprice, or artifices of an insignificant, turbulent, or corrupt junto or junto to the regular deliberations and decisions of a respectable majority. Now, what does that mean? That means a small group in the minority, in this case, the Republicans, could just block everything to embarrass the current administration. Well, in fact, they would be politically motivated to do that. It would be political negligence not to block the legislation of the current party in place if you're the minority. So Hamilton explained, this country will never get anything done if we let the minority block legislation. We must have the majority in a democracy actually pass the laws that they said they would pass. There is absolutely no dispute about it. The founding fathers hated the idea of a filibuster. That is why they did not put it in the Constitution. In fact, they wrote the whole Constitution to get rid of the idea. So media, I'm begging you to do your job. I'm begging you, because you guys control the national conversation. As long as you keep telling falsehoods about how the filibuster is part of American tradition, it allows the corporate Democrats and the corporate Republicans to hide behind that veil. So finally, I promise it to you guys. So what did they use the filibuster for between 1917 and 1970 when they used to use it about once a year? Well, Adam explains, civil rights didn't pass back then. And I think it's really important. For 87 years, every single civil rights bill that came before Congress, and there were many, many, from the end of Reconstruction in 1877 to the first time a Southern filibuster was broken in 1964. Every single civil rights bill that came before the Senate was systematically forced to clear a supermajority threshold, and they were unable to do it. And so they all failed. They never, and this is amazing, they never used it for a piece of legislation that was not about civil rights. In fact, a huge percentage of those bills that they killed were anti-lynching laws. So let me give you this final quote. Adam Gentleson explains, when Gallup polled federal anti-lynching laws in 1937, they found support of 72%, including a majority support in the South. Anti-poll tax laws also had upwards of 60% support. The country was ready for those civil rights laws, but because of the supermajority threshold, they didn't pass in the Senate. Now, look, you could look at that number and go, oh my God, only 72% were against lynchings in 1937, right? But at the same time, the country was certainly ready to pass an anti-lynching law, but they couldn't pass one for another 30 years because the racist senators from the South said, no, we demand the right to lynch black people. And that's what they used the filibuster for almost exclusively. So don't tell me that the filibuster is a good thing. It is a monstrous thing that our founding fathers despised and was used mainly for the worst acts in American history. Was.
Yeah, man, the way the media, and specifically, I'm not talking about OWN or Fox News or hate radio. I'm talking about CNN. I'm talking about MSNBC. I'm talking about the outlets that are not your nice liberal auntie watches on a nightly basis, okay? Your nice soccer mom auntie watches all the time. They're the ones espousing this dreck. It's just BS. This is not some, you know, parliamentary tradition that should just be held so sacred. And I might add, man, if 4 years of Donald Trump in office didn't teach us anything, it should have taught us this, that most of these norms nobody cares about. This dude spent 4 years completely obliterating and smashing every civic, procedural, all kinds of norms. And guess what? We're still here somehow. I think we would be able to survive an abolishment of the filibuster, Cenk. I'm sorry, it's hard for me to believe that we can't. After watching Donald Trump treat, you know, these cultural norms within the federal government as nothing, which they obviously are.
That's such a great point, Waz. Because honestly, I forgot that for a second. You're right. After Trump, we're having a conversation about norms. We're having a conversation about norms. We're talking about practice. Okay. Don't talk to me about practice or the playoffs, okay? No, we're not talking about etiquette. We're not talking about norms. We're not talking about procedures, okay? But, and guys, like I said, because it isn't about that. It's about the cover that the Democrats need to not pass $15 minimum wage, to not pass Green New Deal, to not pass Medicare for All, to not pass the economic agenda that they pretended to be in favor of. So media, please do your job and explain people what the real facts are and the real history are so they can vote the right way. All right, look, I'm gonna do one more story because I'm a bad man, okay? Well, stay with me. Stay with me, brother. Stay with me.
Don't go anywhere. I'm here.
Okay. All right. Meghan McCain has advice for us. So this ought to be good. So she's going to bring up Kamala Harris. She's going to say all sorts of nonsense. Let's listen, and then we will tell you what the reality is.
I want to show a clip to explain why it's happening with Republicans.
Let's just say there's a vaccine that is approved and even distributed before the election. Would you get it?
Well, I think that's going to be an issue for all of us. I will say that I would not trust Donald Trump. And it would have to be a credible source of information that talks about the efficacy and the reliability of whatever he's talking about. I will not take his word for it.
So she's expressing skepticism about the vaccine under the Trump administration. A lot of Republicans I know are expressing skepticism about the vaccine under the Biden administration, which is why this has been so dangerous, that this has become so politicized. Both sides are equally responsible for this. Republicans are contrarian by nature. We are built in from my very fabric up to question authority and to question big government. And when big government is saying you have to do X, Y, and Z, we're going to question it.
Except for when it's the Patriot Act.
Yeah. Yeah, good point, Waz. So, all right, first of all, Waz is right. They passed the Patriot Act, they passed all this. They don't want to question anything. As long as they're in charge, they want you to bow your heads and do exactly as they tell you to do. Second of all, equally responsible? Both sides are equally responsible for sowing mistrust about the government and coronavirus. Preposterous, man. She cut off Kamala Harris there. You know what the rest of her answer was? But if Dr. Fauci says that it's fine, I trust him, so then I would take it, right? Conveniently, she left that part of the clip out, right? Basically, what Kamala Harris was saying is, if you gave me an actual scientist and not a moron like Donald Trump, then I'll trust it. But I'm not going to trust an idiot that doesn't know a goddamn thing about coronavirus. And why did she say something like that? I don't know, because Donald Trump thought you could inject disinfectant into your lungs and get rid of coronavirus, and that you would have to be really one of the dumbest people alive, which unfortunately is about 40% of this country, to believe anything that comes out of that fool's mouth. So here, we're gonna show you, we got comments from Dr. Birx, who's gonna regulate here, but I wanna show you what Trump said and Dr. Birx's reaction to that to give you a sense of whether this issue is 50-50 or not on who to trust.
So supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light. And I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that too. Sounds interesting.
We'll get the right folks who could.
Right. And then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute. 1 minute, and is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see, it gets in the lungs and it does a tremendous number in the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're gonna have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me.
He took her breath away, man. She's never heard anything dumber in her life. Never. Never. And I saw her brain imploding as he was talking. Like, I was a doctor. What am I doing here? What am I doing here? And I saw it rolling around in her head, like, oh my God. Like, oh my God, half the country believes this. Oh my God, half the country believes this. Okay, now if you're saying, hey, Cenk, you're extrapolating there. You don't know that she was thinking that. Well, good news. We have Dr. Birx now talking about it. So Brent, roll that tape.
That moment, obviously, there's a lot of tape on that. You can see how extraordinarily uncomfortable I was. Unfortunately, he was not speaking to me. He was speaking to the DHS scientist who had presented the data. And then when he did turn to me, I said, not a treatment. I have spent almost 30 years in the military. Those of you who have served in the military know that there are discussions you have in private with your commanding officers, and there's discussions you had in public. Frankly, I didn't know how to handle that episode. I still think about it every day. When I was spoken to, I said not a treatment. If someone didn't have the military training that I had, maybe they would have reacted differently. And it's something Dr. Fauci and I talked about all the time, is how to correct the record.
So, of course she thought he was a moron because she's a doctor, okay? And doctors know you can't inject disinfectant into your lungs or zap your body with lights and have that fix coronavirus. You also can't do hydroxy, as he, you know, made up out of whole cloth. He's like, I don't know, maybe we go with hydroxychloroquine, or maybe we go with lights zapped into our brains. What do you think, Dr. Birx? And she said, another thing she said in that interview was that moment, obviously, there's a lot of tape on that. You can see how extraordinarily uncomfortable I was. Yeah, I was. We could see it. So now Meghan McCain is telling us, no, you should treat both sides equally. And you know, Trump, Biden, I can't tell the difference.
Yeah, and Meghan McCain clearly, obviously, has no credibility, right? Like there's no other way to paint that. But I will say this. The Dems around election time were getting cute with how they decided to frame and politicize certain things. Kamala did get a little too cute in her answer right there, right? Like, because she did want to take a dig at Trump and the untrustworthy nature of how he handled the virus and the response to it. She was getting cute. She was getting political. And I will say, like, this is around the same time when Nancy Pelosi was like, nah, we can't pass a stimulus before the election because people might like it and Trump might get votes off of it. So I will say, you know, they were getting cute around then about the things that they decided to politicize. But again, Meghan McCain, she has no credibility. Once you do this both sides equal stuff, it's nonsense. It was the White House. It was Trump who used his bully pulpit to politicize the shutdown, to politicize the mask mandates, to politicize all the stuff, not going to church, not going to school. He's the one that said, no, we want to get you back in church. We want to get you back to work. We're the ones who want it, not the Democrats. So that was completely Trump's doing. Like, there's no two ways about that.
Yeah, Wizard of Oz regulating right there. It's true. The Democrats did do those things. But in terms of science, there's no comparison. The one guy was an idiot that didn't have any idea what he was doing and telling us, oh, you should have trusted him. No, we're not. Well, I was going to use an old school.
I was wondering why I couldn't get OxyClean at Costco around the time. It was confusing, man. It was weird how that worked out.
The Clorox and stuff. I mean, I didn't know how to hit the. All right. One last thing about McCain. She also said in that segment, she said, there's been many, many opportunities to right this wrong, including President Biden going on TV and giving credit to President Trump for the help with the rollout of the vaccine, which he didn't do. No. Okay, Maggie, let me be super clear. We are never going to give that moron credit for anything, okay? Because if he did accidentally do something right, it's because he tripped over it, okay? You just saw the moron say we should inject disinfectant into our lungs. You think he had a strategy? You think he had a brilliant strategy on coronavirus? No, I'm not going to let them rewrite history. I'm just not going to do it. No, he had no earthly idea what he was doing. When he came out of the hospital, because he himself got coronavirus, because that's how stupid he was. He's a president, man. They can put you in a bubble. And you don't have any idea how many doctors there are to protect the president, right? And he's like, I don't need those stinking doctors. You're going to coronavirus. He like baseline coronavirus and then got it because he's that dumb as a president of the US. And then he comes out in that same speech that you're looking at there. And he's like, you know, they say I'm immune. Maybe. I don't know. You're speaking to the nation. Then why didn't you find out? You were in the freaking hospital. You had it. You've been president for 10 months during coronavirus. So no, we are not going to thank him, Megan. All these Republicans go around going, hey, when are you guys gonna thank Trump? Now I'm done with that talking point. The correct answer is never, ever. Okay, I think I'm done. All right, Waz is gonna stay here. I'm gonna stay here. Francesca is gonna join us. We're gonna have a great second kind of hour. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.